Welcome to Elite Wrestling Radio. I'm Hotshot Danny Duggan, and we are back with another edition of EWR. And what a program we've got for you today. Later in this episode, we've got the controversial, say whatever's on his mind, A-list Anderson Tyson Moore coming to the program. Tyler Colton last week ruffled some feathers, caused some heat with some guys. I think that's going to be turned up a notch or two with A-list Anderson Tyson Moore. What's going on with Canadian Wrestling's Elite? What's new in the last week? Well, we've got a big event coming up this Sunday. Canadian Wrestling's Elite debuts at the Club St. B with a special double feature presentation, which is going to see CWE from 4 to 6 p.m., followed by WWE WrestleMania 30. You can watch both those events all for the price of one, and that's only $10. On the event this Sunday, there's going to be a 10-man Battle Royal in the main event on this afternoon special. Also on the card is going to be a barroom brawl. Misfit Mike Mission and Billy Blaze are going to go head-to-head, reopening some old wounds from their rivalry last year. Also on deck, CWE Tag Team Champion, the Murder City Saint, Nate Hardy, wrestles the blue-eyed idol, Tyler Colton. The big sexy beast, AJ Sanchez, will be on hand taking on super friend Corey Kincaid. Social media specialist Tyler James will wrestle the mastermind Kevin Cannon. And much, much more. So get down to Club St. B this Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. for CWE action and then WWE WrestleMania 30. Watch it with all the stars of Canadian Wrestling's Elite and enjoy a good night of professional wrestling action. Just announced this week, and details will be coming a little bit, coming in the coming weeks, a big 10-show tour has been announced for the month of July, and that tour is going to be headlined for the first time ever by the Mighty Midgets. That's right, the little people are coming to Canadian Wrestling's Elite, and that includes midget wrestling legend Short Sleeve Samson, the current Micro Championship Wrestling heavyweight champion from Hulk Hogan's Micro Championship Wrestling, a man you've seen many times on World Wrestling Entertainment Television. He's going to be in Manitoba for 10 shows across the province, and he'll be taking on midget wrestling star Mike Hammer from right here in Winnipeg. So we've got 10 big shows coming up in July to follow up the upcoming Last Action Hero Tour. When we get back to the program next week, Club St. B is going to be all done, so we're going to be able to touch base on what went down that Sunday, and then we're going to be able to start promoting what's coming up. A part of that Last Action Tour in May, we got 6 shows in 6 days across Manitoba, and things are starting to come together. There's going to be some big-time matches that you're not going to want to miss a part of that tour. We're going to take a quick second, get Anderson Tyson Moore on the line. Stick with us. It's going to be one hell of a ride. And we are back on the line. And on the line is the current 123 approved .ca TV champion, A-list Anderson Tyson Moore. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you may be the modern day Mecca Shea Madison. Nobody quite catches heat like you do in this day and age. And since we announced you're going to be on the program, a lot of people are on edge about what Anderson Tyson Moore might have to say in the next hour.
Well, you know, if you know me, I will say exactly what I want to say, and I don't fear any kind of consequence.
Well, we'll get this thing started. Let's go down, let's stroll down memory lane and let people know a little bit about Anderson Tyson Moore, his upbringing in the professional wrestling business, and what got him to where he is today, being the heat-seeking magnet he is. You first started in the business with the legendary Tony Candelo, who we had on the program a couple weeks ago, who was another memorable guest. How did you get your start with Tony Candelo? How did you find Tony?
Actually, that was a very good story, because once I got out of high school, I originally just actually made the football team at the Bisons, and I just wasn't really set on what I wanted to do yet. I mean, wrestling was always something I loved, and at that time, I mentioned I wanted to become a professional wrestler, and the girl I was seeing at the time, her sister and mom ran into Tony, Ted Buck High School, where he actually was bringing in some tapes to do some editing, and they mentioned he was a wrestling trainer, and lo and behold, they met him right then and there, and they offered him over to come over to the house. I went over and sat down with Tony for, must have been a good couple hours, just talking about the business. And a few months later, after I finished the football season, I signed up with Tony.
So you signed up with Tony, you began training. Who was in your initial training class?
Initial training class was the Polish monster, Ivan Szyszynski. Everybody might know him as Krzysztof Szyszynski at the UFC. And a guy named Cam. I don't know where he is now. I believe he's a teacher now. Those are the basic two guys that I was there, and I was the third one that came in. Tony would show us a few things, and Don Callis himself would actually step in the ring and show us a few things as well.
How much longer into your training class was it until La Sombra started training with Tony Candelo?
You know what? That's actually a really funny story because Lasama maybe came in about a year later, and it wasn't so much as a new student. I remember we were all sitting there, just kind of, you know, chit-chatting and whatnot, and Lasama actually just kind of wandered into the building, and we kind of wondered who this kid was walking in. He jumped up onto the ring and started walking around the ring, and we all kind of just were sitting there, just didn't know what this kid was doing, and Dom went up and talked to him, found out what was going on, and that's what started Lewis Somberg getting to the NHP when NHP was running there.
Over the last couple of weeks, we've been talking to people about their different training programs getting into the business, how little training they may have had or how much training they had before getting into the professional wrestling business. What was training with Tony and Don like? What was the typical day of training, and how long after your training was, or how long of training did you complete before you began wrestling in matches?
When we started, Tony would have me bump on just the floor at a gym mat. And that basically went on for, I would say about 2 weeks. I think 2 weeks solid training. We went about three times a week when they were running downtown the Giant Tiger. And it was just basically bumped on the mat, learning different falls, different ways to fall, how to brace yourself when you hit that mat. And eventually, when I was able to convince them that I was good enough, they allowed me to go into the ring, show me some more stuff, taking the bumps in the ring, how to properly not injure yourself or the person you are wrestling. And I think that must have been before I got my first match. Took me a good solid 6 to 8 months before I even got considered to go into my first match against Ivan.
It's interesting you say that, because a local most recently after our podcast last week said a training program without a ring is not a training program, and it's a fraud, so to speak. I'm a firm believer, and Mentolo is very much the same way in his training, that you need to have a certain fundamental base before being allowed in that ring. Being allowed in that ring is a privilege. Was that kind of instilled in your mind as well before being allowed in the ring, that you had to earn the opportunity to get into one?
Oh, absolutely. I think with the business that we love, I think you have to earn the right, earn the respect of everybody around you. And I think it's one of those things you got to pay your dues. How tough are you? Can you handle those things? Can you handle that stress? Can you handle, being put down, beat down? Because that's what this business does. It's going to beat you down. People are going to talk about you. And you got to basically prove your way to get into that ring. I mean, when I first stepped in that ring after 2.5 weeks, I missed meeting in 3 weeks. I mean, I was just ecstatic when I finally got in there. It was just a very humble experience. And I think that anybody who wants to sit there and cry and complain or say it's not part of training, they don't understand wrestling. They don't understand what it takes to become a wrestler. And that's the reason why we have all this garbage in this business today.
I think that's a very valid point. I think too many times guys get rushed into the ring and they get advanced in their training well before they have the fundamentals down packed, and before they know how to bump properly, or they know how to chain wrestle properly, or put together a small movements yet. They're already hitting the ropes, or they're already doing moves off the ropes, or suplexing guys, things that you wouldn't be doing if you weren't training inside a ring. So when you have that base built in and you can wrestle without needing to hit the ropes or do these crazy moves, then you can step into that ring. Then you can learn some of the fancy and fun stuff.
Exactly. And I think, you got to learn to take those bumps and those things before you can step in that ring. And I remember what Tony always said, until I'm able to get in that ring and not hurt myself or the person that I am wrestling or training with, then I am not allowed to do any kind of physical contact with that person. I mean, I have to basically prove to them that I can take these bumps and take them properly from every angle you can think of, from a body slam angle to a back bump to a float over bump. Anything you can think of was basically thrown my way. And until I was able to show that I can achieve those goals, they allowed me to do any kind of physical training off the ropes and stuff.
So about a year in, you were given the green light to have your first match. Where was that first match, and who was it with?
That first match was back in 2002. Might have been from that area against Krzysztof Szyszynski, but this time in Winnipeg, he was known as Ivan. We had that out in Dryden at the Dryden curling rink. I was probably very nervous, but that match was talked about for a while. And, Ivan at the time was very green himself, so you can only imagine how that match was and how stiff it was. It was very exciting for me, being that locker room was some of the guys like Sabu and AJ Styles and Jerry Lynn. When I was on my first show, it was very good, and it was a very good learning experience.
Yeah, you had a very nice, interesting upbringing into the wrestling business, in the sense that a lot of guys that train in Winnipeg train under a local trainer and a local promotion, and they start working with local guys who maybe haven't made it very far themselves, so they're not necessarily learning and being able to pick the brains of guys who've been to the dance. You mentioned a lot of big names you got to be on shows with very early on in your career. How did that help your development as you were coming along very early on?
I think it helps immensely. honestly. Anytime you can get anybody, I mean, even if it's a guy who's been wrestling less than you, if they have world experience and they have travel experience, I think it's a necessity and need to pick these people's brains and find out how to work and do these things and stay calm in certain situations. I remember it was my second match, and I was in Thunder Bay, Ontario. I remember I was kind of the doorway, and I was extremely nervous because we went from basically a crowd of, I'd say, about 20 people that we had in Dryden to Thunder Bay. We had over 500 to close to 700 people, and my nerve level just basically went up the charts. And as I was standing at the door, Sabu was actually right by the door, and he looked at me and he asked me straight in the eye, he goes, "This is your first match, isn't it?" And I explained to him, you know, exactly how long I've been training. And I remember the exact thing he said to me before I walked out in that ring. He said, "All you got to remember is slow down. Slow down, take your time." He goes, "End of the day, where are you going? You're not going to McDonald's, you're not going anywhere else." He said, "You just got to basically slow down and just go. There's no rush into what you have to do. I mean, you just got to get to your point where you need to get in the match. You need to slow down. You start, you know, get a little fast, get a little frustrated. That's when things go wrong."
It became very common around that time you were wrestling La Sombra quite a bit. You guys had many matches. Anytime I recall seeing a match or reading a result of a show from that time, you seem to be wrestling La Sombra. How did you end up getting paired off with him, and how many times do you think you actually wrestled him during that period of time?
Oh, man. I gave Sombra his first win in the business, and this must have been, oh, wow. I can't even, it must be over the hundreds, definitely, that I wrestled Sombra a couple times in the Northern Tours for Tony. You know, always being paired off with La Sombra. And, you know, it was a good little experience because it was really helping me at that time when I was new to work someone who I'm very comfortable with. But as time grew, you know, you're not getting any better when you're wrestling the same guy. So it was getting kind of frustrating after a while when I wrestled the same guy after guy with the same outcome. The matches were very basically the same. And, you know, and I got a lot of respect for Sombra. We've both been in this business for a while, and, you know, we both have a history together. And how I was always paired up with Sombra, I have no idea. I never really asked Tony why, when Tony consistently put us together, but it was what it was.
You stayed with Tony for quite a long time. Like, in the early 2000s, there was a lot of Winnipeg wrestling promotions operating. There had to be close to 10, maybe even more. But for, you know, the first 3-4 years of your career, you stayed very loyal to Tony and Don, even when they weren't running shows for long periods of time. What was the reason behind that loyalty, and why did you eventually decide to branch out?
I think at that time, you know, being new, you don't really want to burn your bridges at that time. So, I mean, when I first broke in with Tony and them, it was basically instilled in my mind that I was NHB, I was that company. You know, you didn't really branch off from that point. And I think within that time, you know, we were wrestling maybe three times a year. I mean, if we're lucky, that third time. We got some tours, and I think it was just you know, being in just very, very fresh in the business, not really understanding where to branch off to, where to go to. So I stayed loyal to Tony when he asked me, you know, "You're going to be NHB, you're always going to be a part of this company, and if I was going to go anywhere, I need to talk to Tony." But at that time, I didn't really have any networks, I didn't have any you know, contacts to get a hold of who wrestling where. Like, I never knew what companies existed really in Winnipeg until further I talked to Mentolo when PCW came around.
So Mentolo was the person that then guided you towards PCW, because that was the first promotion, if I'm not mistaken, that you started to wrestle for regularly after NHB, correct?
Yes, I went to NHB. I asked Mentolo about PCW. Mentolo, you know, many great things to say about PCW, and I talked to Tony about it, and Tony understood that I wasn't getting much ring time. You know, and it was just more of a respect factor. Tony said, "Definitely go do it." So I went and made, I contacted Andrew, and I believe Mentolo also put the good word in for me. And I don't know the exact time when I did debut with PCW, but it was pretty much shortly right after that when I talked to Mentolo within a month.
What were some notable differences going from NHB to PCW? Two completely different companies, ran with different philosophies. What were some of the major differences right away that you had to adjust to going from one locker room to the next?
I think it was just the, you know, different talent levels that you had, different guys. I mean, at that time, I was coming off some, you know, bigger shows and some really big names. I think my attitude at that time was I was, you know, better than everybody. When I remember getting into PCW, it was more of a reality check. I think that, you know, at that time, PCW was running those weekly shows, and it was definitely a different change for me to wrestle on a weekly basis. And at times, that PCW crowd could be really hard on you when you're young and you're trying to get into the business. And I think it was just basically just trying to get my name out there, and they weren't really responsive to me when I first came on to PCW, and I had a really rough go for a while there, just trying to put together some matches and you know, getting used to the guys. I mean, it was, you know, trying to find out who your friends are and stuff like that. I was basically coming to a locker room of guys I didn't know, and you know, you're just trying to build a network of friends, and it was really hard for a while until I got that opportunity to team up with Robbie Royce.
Is that how your friendship with Royce started? Were you put into a team with him?
Well, what happened originally was Royce requested to work me on one PCW show. We did that one. And then we wrestled with Ben at the Devil's Fun Club for the good old TJ Brad there. And since then, I guess they sent me on a singles path for a while. And when Royce was bringing back the Team Impact with him and himself and Darren Dalton, at that time, Darren Dalton was injured. They need another route, and Robbie Roy suggested myself to join Team Impact, and you know, they wrote the storyline to have me involved, and ever since then, you know, myself and Robbie Roy have pretty much been best friends since then, and you know, to be partnered with someone who's been in the business for so long, to help you grow in this business was more than I can ever imagine to have. To help me develop, because you can't get any better, you know, wrestling the same guy. I mean, if you're able to get any time in this business, you pair up with anybody who understands how to work, and you can be with them every single time and every single match and learn and pick their brain. I mean, that was just a blessing for me.
So did you and Royce hit it off right away on a personal level, or was it a mutual respect that was formed through working together in matches and then eventually becoming a team?
It was a mutual understanding. I think that even when we had our first matches, we kind of understood each other, and we understood where we were going when we were hitting some things, and even things we didn't really talk about, that he would do something, I would understand where he was going. So I think we just had a natural chemistry together, and I think that really transitioned well to having a fantastic friendship, but also being a fantastic tag team.
There have been many incarnations of the Team Impact team over the years. How would you compare your version with Royce compared to some of the ones of the past, like with Darren Dalton and other people that teamed with Royce along the way?
I always considered the originals, obviously, with Darren Dalton and Robbie Roy, that's the original Team Impact. That will never be taken away from those guys at all. I think just the fact that when me and Royce finally teamed up, I think it was more just, I think we had more chemistry than any other tag team or version that ever came out. And I think we just kind of understood each other. We worked very well together. We looked very well together. And I think things just kind of, you know, anything in this business, you can wrestle a guy one-on-one. You just always have that chemistry, that one person, no matter what it is. You can basically go out there and put on an amazing match, whether it's a tag or a single match.
So you wrestled for PCW for quite a few years, and probably about 3 years after the fact, Canadian Wrestling's Elite popped up on the scene when I announced that I'd be operating in January 2009. Yourself and Robbie Royce were offered spots on that initial inaugural show for CW, but you decided to decline, and you stayed with PCW for some time. What was the reasoning behind declining the initial offer to come to CWE?
You know, I think when you look at the whole standard of PCW back then, I think we all bought into that cult factor. And I'll give anything to Andrew there. Andrew was a very good speaker, a very good motivational speaker. He can manipulate you into a way of thinking, this is the PCW way, this is what we were supposed to do, we are the greatest company in the city. Andrew's very good at convincing you that this is where you needed to be, this is where you have to be. And we continuously bought into that mindset that we were the best. That, you know, we, even with CW popping up out of the blue, we thought, okay, they won't even last a year. This is the mindset. You know, even before every show, Andrew did his whole, you know, pre-game speech, and it was always continuous while cutting down other companies that we are the best. Everybody wants to come see us. So I think over time, when you constantly always drinking, you know, you drink that Kool-Aid and you constantly always think, you know what, this is the best. We are better than everybody else. And reality shows that when you only draw 20 people as opposed to another company who's drawing with better wrestlers, you can only drink that Kool-Aid for so long before you know it's got a bad taste. And at that time, you know, we were very frustrated. You know, Royce at that time retired. I think, I don't know how many times it's happened before. And I was basically running the singles run as the PCW Canadian champion, and I was not happy one bit at all. I wasn't happy with the direction that was going on, and with the storylines, and, you know, there was times where I even woke up and I had to go to the show, and I didn't really want to go wrestle. I was trying to find every excuse not to go. I mean, walking out into that crowd and only seeing 10, 15 people, that's a motivational killer. I mean, it's very hard to get into that kind of mindset to go put on a great match and constantly trying to believe that we are better than CWE. And in reality, when you finally think about things and you look at everything in a grand scheme, we weren't good. There was not one bit of what PCW was good at that time. Was PCW good in the past? We definitely were. We had an amazing talent like yourself and AJ, Stephen Epic. We had all those guys in that locker room with some great talent. When everybody starts leaving, what's left? A lot of the bottom guys. So it was very tough. And I think when I remember talking to Bobby Royce, we're at Monty's bar, and I had mentioned that I wasn't happy, and we started discussing these things, and CW name came, popped up, and we were both interested. He was kind of ready to come out of retirement, and I wasn't happy, and I was just ready to get out. And I even told Royce, I said, obviously it's not going to be me that's going to have to contact CW, because at that time I had heat with you guys as well. And I said, there's absolutely no way that if I sent that message to you guys, the chance of me getting booked is very slim. So I remember, I'm pretty sure Robbie Royce talked to yourself and the booking committee, and lo and behold, controversy started.
To touch on that heat, the reason you had heat with some guys in the CWE locker room is, as a member of PCW, you would very often come to CWE events, sit in the crowd, and then go online and be very vocal about those shows and your dislike for them. Was that a part of the PCW pride, or were those sincere feelings on your behalf?
Both and both. I mean, there's some shows that I'll admit, but there's some shows that I did not like, and at the same time, when you're drinking that PCW pride, it both plays in a factor. So, I'm always trying to say I'm rah-rah PCW, and I understand I got some heat with the things I said, and because there's some things I didn't like, and there's some things I didn't understand. And I think a lot of it also has to do with a little bit of, trying to stay loyal to that PCW brand that you're just wanting to rip up any company. I know that can sound hypocritical now when I'm with CWE, and if I want to, badmouth another company, but I think my mindset nowadays is understand the business and what it takes to run a successful company.
Did you have heat with anyone specifically? Did anyone approach you about your comments?
From what I remember, one time Robbie Royce asked me that one point, he told me, AJ Sanchez actually messaged him wanting my number. You can only imagine at that time, AJ wanted to punch me in the face or whatever. I'm pretty sure a lot of guys want to punch me in the face. Probably a little more than that. That's the only guy that I know that I was told that had some that reached out to try to talk to me. I'm pretty sure there was more.
In a business where you're generally told to, kind of stick to yourself, ears open, mouth shut, you go the complete opposite approach and you speak whatever on your mind. Has that approach gotten you heat with anyone else in the business at times? And why do you decide to take that approach opposed to just doing your own thing?
It came to the point where even for a long time, I was very quiet and didn't say nothing, but I've always been a person who's always been outspoken. There's always a time and a place when you say stuff, and I know a lot of times I will cross over that line. I will say, hey, you definitely stepped over that line there. Damn, you got to pull that back. And I have said many things. I have pissed off guys like Zach Mercury, guys like TJ Brad, Mark Merrick, Andrew Shellcrosses, everybody you can think of. I will say, if I feel strongly about something, I will say it. I don't believe in holding something back. I understand that I will be stepping over boundaries. I understand I will be causing heat towards myself. And at the end of the day, it's just who I am. I cannot stop being who I am. I will not stop being who I am. And I think people that know me on a personal level from friendships understand the kind of guy I am, but also I'm not going to stop, being myself. And if I find something that I do not like, if I find something that I am unhappy with, I'm going to say it. And I know it's going to ruffle feathers. I ruffle feathers on a daily basis. And I think if people truly know me, they understand the kind-hearted person I am. But yes, I will say something, and I will cause the heat. And I really don't care for the consequences at times. And a lot of times I will be, oh, shit, you're on me a lot of shit for this. But at the end of the day, it's just who I am.
So you made the decision that you and Royce were going to come over to Canadian Wrestling's Elite. How did you break that news to Andrew, and how did he respond?
Well, I actually did break that news to Andrew. Now, this is where the heat all started, because when I actually thought about it, because we all know Andrew. Andrew will do everything in his power. At first, he'll say, yeah, that's no problem. You can go ahead and do that show. But leading up to that show, the weeks and the days, Andrew will send you amounts of emails of why you shouldn't do it, why you shouldn't do this, and we got plans for you to do this way. We got, and I was basically at the point where I didn't want to deal with all that. My mind was set that I was going to jump that guard railing. And I, you know, and I was talking to Royce, I'm just not going to tell him. I'm going to go do the show. I'm going to jump that guard railing. Then I'm going to, then at that point, I'm going to accept all that flood of what Andrew's going to come at me at once. Not just this constant day of Andrew saying this and saying that and saying this. Because let's face it, Andrew does it to everybody. Anybody who wants to leave TCW, Andrew will first say, you know, hey, you could do that show. That's no problem. But as the days lead up, Andrew will definitely send an email out saying, oh, listen, you know, I really wish you would consider or reconsider this option. You know, we have great plans for you. We want to do this with you. And that's a lot of the guys, reason why guys don't leave, because Andrew is such a good manipulator. He can basically get in your mind and just tell you that this is the PCW way. This is the PCW family. Because I didn't really want to accept those emails and let those things build up.
To those not familiar with how you debuted, we did an angle where yourself, where you jumped the guardrail and attacked a wrestler on an event, and you know, it was well known with you being with another company at the time that you were not from CWE, and you were jumping the guardrail and making an attack on a CWE wrestler, and soon after, Royce followed, and a few others did as well. So you're saying, to clarify, that Andrew had no idea that was going to happen. That was completely impromptu to Andrew Shallcross.
That's right.
And what were the repercussions once that happened?
You know what, even the repercussions after, I mean, Andrew was obviously pissed off. I mean, there was numerous emails that went out. He even got his little boy to go send out a massive email on Kenny Omega. And I'm not sitting here downing Kenny Omega. We all know how good he is. But he went to the point of having Kenny send emails, how disappointed he is, and stuff like that. And I actually went down to Dylan's at the time, because at that time I was the Canadian champion. So I think that's what caused a lot of feathers too, because I was their current champion, and I jumped the guard railing. And when I went down to Dylan's, we had a talk, a very civil talk, actually, and I offered to do both at that time. I said, you know, I'd be more than happy to stay here, and I want to do CWE. And, of course, Andrew would not have any of that. So this went on for a while, and then basically I did business. I went down and did my final match with Nate Hardy in PCW, and we left on good terms. I mean, there was nothing, like myself and Andrew had beers and stuff like that after, and everything was fine. It's the point when Andrew consistently was asking me to come back, hey, you want to do this and this, when I kept on saying no, I kept on saying I want to do both, that's when things kind of started to unravel, as you can say, between me, myself, and Andrew.
Which I didn't quite understand, because at the time, and still to this day, the door's always been open on our end for guys to do both. Mentolo currently wrestles for both PCW and CWE, but when some others try to do it, the block is put on them from doing so, and it's like, well, you know, Mentolo's an exception, or Kenny Omega's an exception. And it shouldn't be that way. I'm a firm believer the door should be open both ways. And if guys want to work, they should be able to work. And for whatever reason, you know, I guess he has his reasonings and his philosophies behind it. He's, you know, shot himself in the foot at times. He's let some really talented guys go who could very well be appearing on each and every one of his events if he left that door open. But he's got his vision on what his product is, and to each their own.
And that's fine. And he's going to have his vision. And the fact is, you got to imagine all the guys that left. The amount of guys that I think that are still in TCW that could value CWE, but they probably will never leave. I'm pretty sure the door's been open to them many times, and they were booked originally, and then all of a sudden Andrew will say, then you'll probably get a call saying, hey, listen, I can't do the show. And we know it's Andrew telling them that they can't do the show and they want to do certain things. You know, I certainly believe a guy like Jackie Jet Lee, amazing talent, I think he's just getting worse while he's in PCW. When I watch these matches, he just seems like he's digressing, and I think this kid has great talent, and I think he can benefit with wrestling good guys in CWE and improving his skill level. But I, so far as I know, I have no idea. I'm pretty sure he was booked and then, you know, all of a sudden decided not to. I think it's going to come down to the point where these guys in the PCW locker room, if they're looking to branch out, if they want to work some better talent, you got to grow a fucking set of balls. You got to tell Andrew, listen, I'm going to go do these shows. I'm willing to do both shows. I mean, that's one thing about TWE. The door is always open to work in different companies and do those shows, not be secluded just to one company. And I remember when I told Andrew I wanted to do both, and I said, well, Kenny Omega did the CWE show and all this, and Andrew's exact words to me goes, well, he's an international superstar. That's different. So I was like, well, I'm an independent worker, so how is that any different? Well, I can't work somewhere, but Kenny can because he's an international superstar. That doesn't make any sense. So it's just the mindset of Andrew, where it's just, and I don't know the booking side of what goes on in CWE, who has been booked before, or guys that were booked for their show and did not come. I'm pretty sure there's been a few. these guys will never come over because they're too either too scared to say to Andrew, I'm going to do the show, or do both. I don't know. I just wish these guys would grow a pair and make those decisions and get better in the ring.
That has happened a few times where a couple guys have been booked. They've given me the go-ahead that they'll be available for the date, and then a couple days prior they tell me they have to pull out, and I know the reasoning behind it. It'll be spun another way, but that's essentially it. And I never quite understand because, you know, on their end, they're saying, okay, you know, if you're working here, you get to work with Kenny Omega, and that's the benefit, so stay here. That's great. Work with Kenny. He's fantastic, and he's going to make you very good. But at the same time, why should they be excluded from wrestling on our 5 shows a month? Even if PCW is running 10 shows a month and we had 5 shows that were non-conflicting with those dates, why can't those guys wrestle 15 times a month so they can continue to get better in front of in front of more people, working with different guys and continue to improve their trade? I don't understand why you have to be capped and limited to how good you're allowed to get. You're allowed to get good, but only so good with this guy. We're not going to let you get as good as you possibly can be working with everybody, and I don't understand that philosophy. It really harnesses talent. And the reason myself and guys like AJ were able to kind of get out of a local slump was because we started branching out and wrestling all over the place locally and getting on the road and wrestling many different people in many different places. That's how you learn as a wrestler.
No, and I totally agree, and I think that, as you said there, some of our guys do the PCW shows, and the door is always open to do that, but when we're offering that exact thing from Andrew's level, Andrew will just easily kibosh those things, and as you said, like, these guys, you know, it's great to work Kenny Omega, you know, we know how good he is and how he can help you out, but after Kenny Omega, what's really there to help them out? You're going to tell me the London Brothers are going to help them out? No, I mean, the London Brothers, in my eyes, are terrible. I don't think they even have any sense of training. So you're going to tell me you're going to wrestle a guy like those guys and get better in the ring? Absolutely not. You're going to wrestle Jay Walker? No, because Jay Walker is god-awful himself. So where are these guys to help you improve to step in that ring? I mean, who you got there? Adam Knight? I think Adam Knight has gotten even worse since he's been there. Plus, he called himself the superhero shape, but yeah, I don't know what the superhero shape is because he still looks like a butterball. So, I mean, you can't get better working these guys that you consistently work every single day. Like, you always work the same guy in PCW, and the talent level that's in PCW now is so watered down. And where is that level of, hey, I got to compete. I got to step in the ring now with someone who's a lot better. Now I got to get myself and my A game to that level. There's no one in PCW.
That's a valid point. Like, back in the early 2000s or mid-2000s, when PCW was the place to go for anyone in Winnipeg that wanted to take it seriously, you know, that used to be the claim that you can go and develop and become better there. And I believe that to be true, because when I went there early in my career, I got to work with the likes of Kenny, Mentolo, Ross Skills, Royce, guys like that were able to kind of mold me and put me in the right direction. And this is no slight at Andrew, this is just a reality. I didn't develop any because of any direction or knowledge he was passing on to me. It was because of the wrestlers I was in the ring with. So, if you're not being able to get in the ring with these wrestlers on a regular basis, you know, it's one thing to get feedback and advice from them watching your match. That's definitely beneficial, but it's more beneficial to be hands-on working with talent of that caliber to get you to the next level. So if you're not getting the opportunity to work with, say, Kenny Omega on a regular basis, you're not going to be benefiting as much as those that do. So you're limiting your ability once again to learn, and that's why at this level of wrestling, it should be wide open for guys to get experience where they can, when they can, because the more work, the better.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, as I said, like, I was in a slump at that point when I made the jump over with Royce. I mean, I felt actually a step behind when I started getting in the ring with some like guys like Sanchez and, the DSP. It was just a different reality check that I was like, you know what, there's a little more of a better level of competition up here. And I struggled for a while in CWE. And there's a while there where I wasn't really, honestly, I can tell you this right now, I didn't feel that I was at that level. And I don't think if I had someone like Robbie Royce at that, you know, as a Team Impact, who knows where my career would have went within CWE. I strongly believe that every after those shows, like, I got better as the shows went on because I was wrestling better talent. I was wrestling guys who are seasoned, guys who are traveling the world, guys who are traveling the road and getting those extra opportunities. And those are the ways that help you. And I think the most breakout match I ever had in my entire life, and I remember someone came up to me after the match, was the TLC match with BSB. I actually had Darren Dolan say, actually came up to me and said, I was really worried about you. I didn't know if you could hang with those guys at all. And he said, when I watched the match, you were able to hang with those guys. And he said, I have a total different level of respect for you now. It's just, you can't get better working crap. I mean, if you're going to continuously put garbage on the street, I mean, it's just, you're not going to get any better. No one's going to clean it up. So you have to basically get better. You have to find the better talent, and you have to challenge yourself. You know, if you understand a guy like Kenny Omega, who is, we all know is a fantastic wrestler. Yeah, if you can't wrestle him every day, you are not going to get better. Like, you're not benefiting yourself. So it'd be nice to see some of these guys branch out and try to wrestle, you know, with some of the talent in CWE. I mean, you're not going to get better working over at Primo's. Let's face it, there's just much more garbage over there. It'd just be nice to see some of these guys, like I said, like Jackie Jet Li, I would love to see make the jump to CWE because I think he has a massive amount of talent. I think he can get a lot better working our guys instead of working over the Primo's and PCW.
Right. Being on the road and as busy as I am traveling to other places, I can tell right away the difference of getting in the ring with a guy that's wrestling all the time and a guy that wrestles once a month. It's night and day wrestling guys that are doing it often or for a living because they're plying their trade all the time. So their work is tight. It's crisp. You know, they know what works for them. They know what doesn't. When you're working with guys that don't do it so regularly, they're a little rough around the edges, and their learning curve is a lot slower than the guys that are doing it more often. So moral of the story, you really need to get in the ring as much as you possibly can. You shouldn't be limiting yourself at any time. And that's not just to say for guys wrestling for other companies outside of Winnipeg. That's anywhere in general. Yeah, that could be in Winnipeg. That could be in Alberta. If you're wrestling for one promoter once or twice a month and you're okay with that, when you have work being offered to you elsewhere, you're not doing this with the intention of getting as good as you possibly can be.
No, exactly. I think that, you know, with the, you know, different companies, you know, as you said, then I'll just, you know, give you outside of Winnipeg to like Edmonton, Alberta. I think that when, it's not that I'm trying to bash these people. I think that when you're putting shitty work out there, you're also shitting on the city. You're shitting on wrestling in general. I mean, there's so much good talent that's out there across Canada and the United States. But when you continuously think that this is the level of wrestling that's out there, I mean, I'll bring up Primo's. Like, if you're telling me that's the actual level of wrestling, how sloppy that looks, how terrible it looks every single time you watch it, it's putting the black eye in the business. It sets it back 60 years. That's what it does. And as you said, like, you can tell the difference when you step in the ring with someone who's very crisp, and you go, okay, well, here we go. Now we got a good wrestler here. We're going to have a good match. I just don't think people understand that when you don't improve your craft, if you don't improve who you are as an entertainer, as a wrestler, as a person in that ring, and then if you don't wrestle someone as equal or better as you, if you're wrestling someone lower, you're not getting any better. You're not going to improve your craft or get any better in that ring. And you're just hurting yourself. You're hurting the business of wrestling. You're putting a black eye on the image of wrestling. And face it, I mean, it's going to be harder for guys like yourself who travel around the world. You know, they say, oh, you're from Winnipeg. Oh, you know, some crap over there. Lucky for you, you have a basic name for yourself out there. But let's face it, I mean, there's crap out there, and it stresses me to the point where I just can't handle watching this shit anymore.
And these are the kind of comments that get you heat across the industry.
Exactly, and that's fine, and I understand. I'm not worried about a guy like the London's coming after me. I'll slap him in the face. But the fact is, I mean, it's just, like, this is the point I want to put out there. I mean, as I said, like, this is running on this topic with the guys like Primo's and some of the crap that's in PCW. Just because you love wrestling does not qualify you to be a wrestler. It doesn't qualify you to even get in that ring. You know, just because someone loves NASCAR driving does not mean they're qualified to jump in a NASCAR and drive about 200 miles per hour. There's got to be a side where basically you don't let these people in. I mean, when we were busting the business back in the day, those vets would never in a million years allow these people, guys like the Mark Merricks, the London Brothers, the Jay Walkers, the James Beavers, all these guys, they would never allow these guys in that business. But right now, these guys are backdooring, creating their own company because they won't get booked on the top shows because you don't want to put the garbage out, you know, in front of the elite shows. And they're continuously making it look bad. And they don't understand that. They don't understand the fact that you're making the business look bad. I mean, I've had many calls from people asking me, like, are you part of this Primo's company that's on TV? I had to tell them, no, I'm not part of that because it's pure garbage, and they know it's garbage. I mean, it sickens me when I see this stuff on TV, when I see this stuff, because I love wrestling, and I don't like to see it get put back. And when I see the progress that, you know, what CWE has made from bringing in some great talent from the United States and across Canada, and putting that draw on shows, advertising their shows, and making wrestling the way it should be, and then you get these other companies that come out and make it look bad, it's really hard to say Winnipeg wrestling is great when there's so much shit around it.
Right, I think in this day and age, there's no excuse why a show should ever be bad because there's so many good quality, talented guys. On you know, there's good quality guys in PCW, there's good quality guys in CWE. In Winnipeg, as a whole, there's a lot of really good wrestlers here. So there's no reason a show should ever be bad. There's enough talented guys that every show should be a home run. And for us personally, like as Canadian Wrestling's Elite, like and I've said it before, we've put on some bad matches and some bad shows that I've not been happy with and have not been proud of. But because of that, I've taken the proper steps to go, you know what? I'm not happy with the direction of the product and some of the matches we're producing and the shows we're producing. So I'm going to start bringing in wrestlers from Alberta, Saskatchewan, Tennessee, North Dakota. There's no reason to have a bad show. There's good wrestlers available to you at a reasonable price from across the continent that are willing to come in and be on events. So at no point in time, whether it's CWE, PCW, Primos, ABC, XYZ Wrestling, there should never be a bad show in Winnipeg. There's enough talented guys here and in the surrounding area to put forth a good show.
Exactly. I think that's the reason why I love the fact when I came over to CWE because the fact that the talent pool was increased. You know, working guys like Jesse Youngblood, who's the 2013 Wrestler of the Year in Alberta. You know, you're wrestling these guys, and it's just you're stepping at the ring level with some guys you can work and guys that you're now having fun with in the ring. I mean, you can't get excited wrestling crap. I mean, as you said, you can't hit a home run every show, but you should always try to hit a home run every damn show by putting the best talent out there, by giving the fans who pay $15 to $20 to come watch a wrestling match not go, well, fuck, that was a waste of fucking money. You know, you want to give them exactly what they want and make sure they go home talking about that show. There's been numerous times, and as you said, there's numerous times that we did not hit home run, that things went down, and you would send a mass email out saying, guys, I'm not happy with this, and this. This is what we need to do. This is ways that you improve your product. And I think that's what I like about the NWE. I think you never get that when I was in PCW. It was just throw the show out there. Here, you're wrestling him, and let's go up there and do it. I think that CW is always trying to grow. CW is always trying to find a better way to, you know, bring wrestlers from across Canada and the United States, like guys like Jason Kincaid and Sigmund. I mean, I never heard these guys before, and all of a sudden we're on the show, and these guys are pretty damn good. And now it goes from, like, you know, I wrestle a lot of guys, I have a wish list. Now, like, okay, now I got some more guys that are on my wish list because I want to work these guys. Now, that's what the beauty thing about what we're trying to do. You can't hit a home run every show, but you damn well fucking better try.
That's exactly it. I think at the very least, you should be always putting forth your best foot to put on the best show you can. And a lot of times, and I'm not just saying this about Winnipeg, but in other areas too, a lot of people will shoot themselves in the foot before they get out of the gate just by what they're presenting the audience and who's booked on the show and the matches they put together. And, you know, this kind of goes back to a conversation I had with Tyler on the program last week. When we're talking about when you have somebody that's not equipped with a wrestling mind, either you know, as a booker or a wrestler, because they don't have that experience level, they don't know why sometimes these pairings are bad. And they'll go, ah, that guy could wrestle that guy. Well, no, that guy can't wrestle that guy because neither one of them can carry themselves, never mind someone else. So you got to stay away from that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, run promotions or run shows because they want to, you know, and I was the same way. I wanted to promote my vision of what wrestling was. And a lot of other people, you know, get into the business for the very same reason, but they don't enlist that help of knowledgeable people that can kind of point them in the right direction. And that's very needed. That's something I still do 5 years after the fact of CWE starting, is I'm still always asking people questions on what can we do to make this better. And you can attest to that being on the crew. I'm always sending out emails and messages saying, this is how we can get better, or how can we get better? I'm stuck on this, guys. What can we do to better this on our TV program? How can we get out of this rut? And you always got to be, you know, asking questions and taking in feedback from qualified professionals that are going to point you in the right direction.
Exactly. I know, as you said there, there's no time that even you can test this, but I've never come back from a match saying, how was it? What can I do better? I've asked that many times. You know, am I the greatest worker in the world? God, no. I know that. Am I the best worker in the city? I don't think I'm not, but, you know, I'm damn well involved and put the best match I possibly can. And I don't think if you're not asking... Even people that are watching the show, like as I said earlier, even doesn't matter if someone's been working less than you. You can never ask, hey, how was that? You know, what did you think about that? There's no wrong in doing that, especially if that person is very seasoned. I mean, if you can always get any kind of feedback to be better, hey, listen, you need to do this better in your matches, or hey, listen, you need to maybe improve on your look by maybe get this a little bit different, maybe take that shirt off, or whatever the case may be, you should always be asking how to improve and become better as a wrestler and as your characters are portraying out there. I mean, everything adds on to one. And if you're not asking those questions, if you're not trying to improve yourself, and you're just going to go out there and just, you know, just look like a piece of shit, I mean, you're not doing the best of the crowd. I remember what Tony Gandello said to me a long time ago. A wrestler needs to look like a wrestler. You can't walk out there looking like a normal, you know, Joe Schmo going, you know, just kind of walking out there to music, because you don't want the fans going, well, I can kick that guy's ass. You don't want that going. You want people to go, oh, okay, this guy looks like he can fucking fight, or he looks like he can wrestle. You don't want that crowd to go, I can kick this fucking guy's ass myself. It's what you portray as yourself and out there, and I think you got to ask those questions on how to prove your character and how to prove yourself in the ring. That's the only way you're going to prove yourself at all.
You're completely right. I just had that conversation with my crew in the last week. I explained that, you know, not everybody needs to look like the Ultimate Warrior or the British Bulldog, you know, but you need to look like a conditioned athlete that can fight or that can compete in an athletic contest. If you're not portraying that image with what you're wearing or how you look, you then take away from the illusion of what professional wrestling is. And you know, when people come to a wrestling show, you want to suspend their disbelief that these are some superheroes getting in there for 2 hours, and exactly. And these are high level athletes going in there toe to toe, and they're wrestling, they're fighting. And when you walk out the curtain and you look sloppy, or you're wearing a t-shirt and you're wearing this and you're wearing that, it doesn't necessarily portray the image of professionalism. So sorry, go ahead.
No, that's exactly it. I said, if you had a split screen TV and you're going to choose exactly what you're going to watch, you say you put a guy like on one screen yourself and Mental Lower, and you put the other side Jay Walker and Mark Merrick, you know, which of the avid fan is going to go, well, I'm going to watch the guys that actually look like they're going to do something. I mean, when you're putting stuff out there that looks like garbage, you're not going to watch it, and yeah. You're not improving yourself. And I think you got to suspend that belief. You got to make sure they go like, oh, I just saw something fucking crazy, not just something that was just bullshit.
Right. And like you said, we have a variety of talent levels and experience levels on our shows. And there's guys that aren't always up to my standard. And with that, I'm always in their ear. Hey, you need to work on this. You need to work on this with your look, with your work. And if they aren't living up to that, you know, they might be very talented, but if I can't present and market you in a way where you're being presentable to an audience and believable to an audience, then you're going to be booked as a guy that's not presentable and believable to the audience, and that will be your spot on the show. You know, everyone's spot is up to them for the taking. If you want to be something special and you want to work at the top of the card, then make sure you look like you deserve to be at the top of the card. Make sure you work like you deserve to be at the top of the card. Make sure your gear looks like you deserve to be at the top of the card. If you're not checking those things off your checklist, then you can't be so upset when, you know, you're in the match, you know, in the undercard, and you're getting beaten 3 minutes on TV. It's, you know, perception is reality. If you don't look like a star, you're not going to be booked like one.
And it's no different when, and you know, if we're talking about that, it's no different when you told me that my look wasn't good. You told me that before. You know, I didn't take it to heart or get pissed off. You know, I tried to improve what I was trying to do. You say, listen, you're supposed to be this, you know, A-list character, but you're coming out there in a fucking t-shirt. That's not really presenting exactly who I am. So I think that, you know, when we have those conversations, that's when that ATM character you see now has kind of evolved from those things. When those emails, like, you got to prove yourself, be different than somebody else. Don't just be the same guy that's out there. Like you said, like, if you're not marketable to put out there, you're just going to get jobbed out in 3 minutes.
These controversial comments are a reason you cause a lot of heat with different guys, and you get into different arguments. I want to bring up a specific argument people might not know about, or a fight that happened very early on in your early CWE tenure. We were doing a joint production with TJ Brad at the time when he was working with Canadian Wrestling's Elite. It was yourself and who is you? It was yourself, Robbie Royce, and I believe there was a third on your team.
TJ Brad? That was TJ Brad. I knew we were going to ask you the question. I actually thought you were going to ask another question.
Actually, yeah. So it was yourself and TJ Brad in a six-man tag at Cowboys against the Strippendales and the Honky Tonk Man. And I recall I was taking care of some business, on the show end, so I wasn't able to watch that match. But I recall I was taking care of something in the locker room, and the next thing I hear, there's a big commotion, and I'm being called over because yourself and Royce are getting into a fight with TJ Brat in the locker room, a physical altercation. What happened that prompted this fight?
I knew you were going to ask this question. I was waiting for that one, and I'm pretty sure there's another one you might ask later for another one. But basically what happened was we had the match. I remember when TJ Brat came up this early and said, listen, you know, I have you and Royce and the Shippendales in there. I need you guys to really up this match, get a little athletic. Because let's face it, because him and Honky are not exactly the athletic type anymore. And they're not going to do more of the punch and kick method. So he needed us to make that match more epic, more show stealing. The problem was they got that match. Within 3 minutes, Honky called to go home after the heels. Just took nothing but a beating, low blows from Honky Tonk in front of the ref. I was so frustrated, and I couldn't believe what was happening, because I try to be a professional in the ring, you know, and I try to be, I'm my own worst critic a lot of times, and I expressed my interest on the ropes. When Roy's in the ring, she came out beside me, and I was complaining. I said, this is fucking bullshit. He's already calling me to go home. And I remember when we got tossed to the outside, there was a big melee, and we're on the outside, TJ back out right in my face when we were still in front of the crowd and started yelling at me. I'm like, and he fucked off, and I'm like, okay, this is going to get to a fucking blow. I knew it was going to get to a blow, not the locker room. As soon as we got into the locker room, it was basically like right there. Like, me and TJ Brown were basically nose to nose. Everything and anything you could possibly say, you know, TJ Brown, mouthy guy, I'm not exactly going to shy away myself. So it was basically just a fucking screen fest for the first bit. So I was not happy. I called out Honky, which, again, a lot of people probably wouldn't do that, you know, on a veteran who's been there. But at the same point, I wasn't happy. So basically, it got all broken up. Royce and Merck was there as well. Merck kind of already pulled each other away. What happened was that TJ Brad actually said something to Robbie Royce that set him off. Royce was never really initially part of the argument to begin with. So when Merck and all those guys kind of pulled us apart and everything was all fine, he said something to actually Royce that set Royce off, that caused Royce to slap him across the face, and hence the all melee, this entire fucking brawl started happening. The funny story about that, too, is that I was just kind of like, oh, shit. No, now it looks like Robbie Royce just saved his buddy. You know, and I was like, fuck, this is not a good imagery. I was kind of pissed off. But I even challenged Brad to go outside. Royce challenged Brad to go outside. Brad would never come outside to fight. That's basically the melee that happened, because he was not happy with that match. And you know, I'm going to admit that I was in the wrong for trying to call out. You never want to call out a veteran like Honky, guy who's been there, done that. And I'll admit my wrongs. But the fact is, it blew up. And, you know, we tried to reconcile that, I think, the day after the show in Maples. And it couldn't really work anymore. And then TJ Brad was gone.
So did you ever mend fences with Brad, or was that where the relationship was left off?
That was pretty much where the relationship was left off. There was nothing that really came about at all. There might have been some Twitter war here and there, back and forth, but nothing really at all. I mean, I used to get along with TJ Brad until up to that point. It's TJ Brad. I don't think I think that's all you got to really say of who he is. And he ruffles feathers just as much as I do, and it was just something that was coming to a blow, and I did. And nothing really came out of it after that. It was just more kind of a washed away kind of thing. And that's the story of the TJ Brad brawl.
I'm drawing a blank on what the other fight is you got into.
I thought it was, you're going to ask me about the Zach Mercury little shoot that we had.
Oh, yes. How could I forget that one?
I'm surprised you forgot that one.
Up in Gillam.
Listeners out there, I'll explain the story, because I think the funniest story about that whole thing is not so much the me and Merck shoot. It was you. It was the funniest thing I think I ever saw, because I'm going to try to explain this to everybody. So basically, I had a good match with Merck the night before. And I'm going to say this, as in Ruffle Feathers again, I don't think Merck's a great wrestler. I think he's atrocious. But the person, Zach Mercury, I can't stand. Baron, who he is outside, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my entire life. I mean, so it was just, this is more just a wrestling brawl. He forgot everything that he called. And it basically just kind of like arguing back and forth. And
this was the second night. You guys wrestled the first night, and then you wrestled again the second night up in Gillam, correct?
Yeah. So the first one went really well, and I was really excited. And I said, oh, we had a really good match. Then, lo and behold, you decide to do it again. You decide, okay, we'll have another match, ATM and Zach Mercury. This one just went to shit. It was beyond awful, trying to recover. And I remember I did an eye rake, and someone was like, I know what you're doing. I did an eye rake. I'm like, what's this? And he grabbed me, that's eye rake. He goes, well, we didn't do that. And I'm like, yeah, he did. He goes, we got to do it longer. And it was just, nothing really made sense. And it got to a blow where we're just kind of like, it was like almost like I was pushing his hands off because he was grabbing me and we're arguing. And I remember looking in the corner of my eye, and there you were. Now, you're maybe a good, I don't know, a half a room away from us, and you know, you're doing your little thing with your little gimmicks there, pumping up before your match. And every time I turn to look back at you, you're inching closer and closer. Not so much because you actually wanted to get involved, I think you just wanted to watch. And next thing, it's like when someone turns the light off, and every time you turn the light on, that person's closer. You turn it on. That's basically what happened. I kept looking, and I'm like, Danny's getting closer. And next thing I knew, your face was right beside us. And you weren't just sitting there. You're still working out, just watching us. Like, you're just amused that finally ATM had a blow with Zach Mercury. And I thought that was a... That's a story I thought you were going to basically
Yeah, it looked like it was escalating to the point you guys were going to start throwing fists, so I wanted to get in close and get a front row seat before it happened.
Oh, it was going to basically start, but then like I said, like, the Darren guy outside of wrestling, the next morning, he invited us, you know, myself and Royce over to breakfast at his friend's place, and he's a totally different guy, but that one, me and Merck don't get along. That's not anything when it comes to the wrestling world. You know, it's not going to work at all. It might come to a point where it's going to be thrown down. And, you know, I was actually with Merck a while ago at a party, and things went really well. You know, we talked, everything was fine. It was just not wrestling related. So that's the story I thought you were going to talk about, because things didn't skip the blow. I just think the funniest part of that story was you inching closer and closer just so you can watch it.
I think, if anything, a rematch needs to be booked to settle the score.
I will retire at CWE. Never. I will go party with the guy, but I will not set the foot in the ring of that guy.
So we've talked a lot about your career with Robbie Royce. It's a little over a year and a half now. I guess we're going on almost 2 years now since you made the official split from Robbie Royce. It happened before. You guys got back together, but this time it stuck. You know, you guys went your separate ways. It looked like Royce was retiring. What caused the split between you and Royce, and how has that transpired into your first singles run?
I think we've done this many times, you know, whether it's in PCW, Team Impact, Split. There was a basic affair for Robbie Royce there, and, take the opportunity to excel yourself. So basically, I think at that point, I think I was ready for that singles run. I think I was ready to showcase that I can carry myself and carry someone else in that ring, or, you know, don't have to carry that person, whatever the case may be. At that point, I thought I can do it. And I started getting those matches with guys like the Tonka, Stevie Richards, and, who's the other guy? So, like, I'm just trying to blank here. But basically, getting to the ring with those guys, I was able to showcase that I can stand on my own, stand alone and stand by myself in that ring. And I think in years past, when we split up and then I was on my own, it just never really worked. I wasn't really seasoned at that time. I wasn't really unsure of what to do. I think when we split, it just worked really well for me because I think I was ready at that point. I think at some point you are ready. And I think the transition from being that ass kicker to the, you know, that we were the Team Impact of Hit Hard, Hit Last, to this flamboyant, scarf wearing, you know, mouthpiece that who I really am as a person, I think once you find that person or that character you are, that you can excel because you understand the character, you understand how you're supposed to work, and then you can basically take that and become better. And I think this singles run for me has been probably the best run I've ever had as a singles career in my entire career in the 12 years that I've been in this business. I think my matches and everything else speak for itself, but I can go in there and put on a great match.
And I definitely attest to that. I think you had a career-defining match. You know, you've had a lot of them in the last 2 years that keep on showing you're ready for the next step. At the 5th anniversary show, you had a match with John Cutler, who came out of retirement for a short period of time. He actually requested to work with you specifically, coming back on his last run, and it culminated in a match at the 5th anniversary show. And I had expectations for it to be a good match, but you guys really, really stepped it up and probably had one of the best, if not best, matches on that show that night.
Oh, and I appreciate that. That means a lot. It was, you know, and I remember being told that he wanted to come work me, and it worked really well. And I think, as I said, I think we gelled really well and who we were as a people, as a person, sorry. And when we conflicted into that ring, I think it just, everything kind of just made sense. I think we compensated each other very well in that match. And it was... I remember walking out of that match and seeing yourself and a few of the boys there standing at the apron there saying how good of a match it was, and everybody was really excited. And I even asked, like, was there anything else we could do? And there was absolutely, you know, and no one else said, like, no, it was just a fantastic match. It was very humbling experience to know that, you know, I'm able to do this, that I'm able to step to that next level, that I'm able to be that guy, that I'm able to be the one that the company goes, this is our guy now. This is the guy that we're going to run with. And I think that's something that, as my personal goal, because I've been always going to be linked, and I understand this, to Robbie Royce. You know, I'm always going to be linked to, you know, I'm booked because of Robbie Royce. I had great matches because of Robbie Royce, and I understand that. Right now, this singles run and that fantastic match I have with Cutler is just solidifying the fact that I am here. I am the next guy. I should be the guy right now, and I'm going to do nothing but prove it to the point where that there's no choice to make me the next guy. And I think that it's just, I'm very excited for the opportunities in the next year or so, wherever we go from here. And I'm going to do nothing but steal the show every single time. And I'm going to make sure that the guy after me or before me is going to understand that they have stepped their game up, because I am not going to stop. And I'm going to make their matches harder, because I want everybody else to be better as well.
As you continue to mount momentum for yourself, where do you see yourself 1 year from now?
1 year from now, I will be the CWE champion. I made it my personal goal to finally be a champion in the city, to be the guy that everybody says, you know, it's your company champion. That's the guy you want to go with. And I think it's just a personal goal for myself to show that I can do this without a partner on my side. I mean, I held that tag title for almost over a year. I've held the 1-2-3 King and the 1-2-3 Approved TV Championship for over close to a year in August. There's no limit to what I can do. My goal is to win that CB championship, and no one's going to stop me. No one's going to, my mind is going to outperform me, and no one's going to outshow me in that ring every single show. My mindset is now is every other person in that locker room, everybody, you know, and I created a controversy back when we asked where you see yourself, and I said I wanted to be the top guy. I created controversy right there in that locker room. I'm very serious when I say that. I want to be that guy. I want to be that person that say, you know, this is our champion. And I don't think if you don't set your goal up to be the best, then what are you striving for? Just to be a wrestler? And I think that's just what it is. I want to be the best. I want to be the guy. And I sure as hell, I'm going to be that guy.
Upon announcing you were going to be on the program, you went on your social media doing what you do, and you made a comment yesterday that you've got some comments you'd like to direct towards a certain promoter. Who's this promoter, and what's the heat? What do you have to say?
The promoter himself is Andrew Ascross, or Shellcross. But, you know, we had our battles in the back, and then that basically has stopped. Like, we've been stagnant. We have not said one word to each other in a while. I had gotten word from an old friend, well, still a friend. She told me exactly what was told to her about what rumors Andrew Shellcross is going out there and saying what happened to myself, her, and Robbie Royce, and some other people in regards to people's families. And this is what I heard. I know she was very upset about it, that someone would go like that, because these rumors are completely false. And I just think that shows the kind of person that Andrew Shellcross is. And I thought to myself, you know, this is over. You know, there's no moving or no blows between me, myself, and Andrew. I think it's over. We're never going to work together. I just think this shows the kind of person Andrew is. He's still bitter. I mean, if he wants to sit there and make rumors about this and that, that's fine. If he wants to be that way, go ahead. I mean, that just shows what kind of sad person he is and the world he lives in, and he's nothing but a fat, lazy promoter who does nothing to benefit this company. And I will dispute the fact that people say, oh, he does a good job, you know, keeping PCW going 12 years. I will dispute the fact, what has he done to help those 12 years? He doesn't grab the venues himself. He got doubles because of TJ Brad. He doesn't promote his shows. So, you know, Andrew Shellcross, in my eyes, is not relevant to Winnipeg Wrestling. And, if he wants to sit there and make false rumors and, you know, just as a little 16-year-old girl, go ahead. That's fine. It doesn't bug me, but you thought you pissed off a friend. I mean, you know, that's just the kind of person Andrew is. So, you know, I'm not bothered by it, but, you know, I will go out there and I'll say what I want. And as far as I'm concerned, if Andrew listens to this or someone wants to pass a message, Andrew's a bitch, plain and simple. There's no sugarcoating, there's no nothing, and he's simply nothing in this business, and he'll always be nothing in this business, as far as I'm concerned.
So the question remains, when will he be back in the PCW ring?
I don't think he'll ever be back in the PCW ring. I think we all know the fact that will never happen. I think even, I think Andrew will send his thing out to Royce to bring him back, but there's never going to be a mention. If I'm involved, it will never happen. And I understand that. I'm very surprised that anything got booked into CWE when I actually made those original comments, but the door is always open. With Andrew, it's never going to be open.
It's funny you mentioned that. Royce mentioned that there was an offer for him to go back over to PCW. Do you think that's a reality that could happen?
I don't think so. I strongly believe that his time there is done, and, you know, being you know, we all know that I'm pretty much Robbie Rose's brother, and they were best friends. I know for a fact that I'll never be, you know, worried about him doing another PCW show in my life. I think he knows that, it's not going to benefit him one bit. And he's happy where he is, and I think he's excelled where he is. And there's no reason for him to go back. And I wouldn't be concerned one bit for CWE fans or for CWE officials.
We like to end our program with something we call Ribs, Rats, and Road Stories. And with your controversial content so far, you got to send us home with something good, my friend. What do you have from the road, Ribs, Rats, or Road Stories?
Oh, man. Not so much on a... there's so many here. You got me off guard. I'm going to have to start getting to think about it. Oh, well, there was one, I guess, a while back. It must be one of the only one I can really think of. It's a more of a rich story. I think it's funny because it actually involves me and Kenny Omega and a guy named Grizzly Morgan. And we caused a big fight because of what we did between Grizzly Morgan and Darren Dalton, because of what me and Kenny Omega did. So we're on a northern tour, and me and Omega saw this disgusting, like, old jockstrap. Like, it was yellow, like, stained. It was just soggy. It was just gross. So me and Kenny scooped the under up with a hockey stick. And while Grizzly Morgan was sleeping, we laid it on top of his face. And so we kind of hit, and then Grizzly woke up and realized what was on his face, freaks out, actually walks up to Dalton, throws it at Dalton's face. This is like in the middle of the night, so the lights come on. They're both in each other's face ready to brawl, all because of what me and Omega did.
There you have it.
There you have it. That's the best one I got without putting more heat on myself here.
Well, I think you douse yourself in kerosene and lit yourself on fire. The amount of heat you cause for yourself with this program. I'm looking forward to the fun feedback I'm going to have and explaining to do. But that's what's made for a fun program, and we want to thank you very much for coming on the program. You definitely sparked things up a little bit, and it's a program we haven't had yet. We've had some fun, and we've had some controversial comments, but you definitely took it to another level, and I'm sure we'll be hearing some feedback from many of people across the industry once this program goes to air.
Hey, as I said, if they have a problem, they can say it right to my face, and I don't mind that at all, and I appreciate you for having me, and I had a lot of fun.
There might be a lineup of guys looking to punch you in that face. Thank you very much, Anderson Tyson Moore. That's going to wrap up another edition of Elite Wrestling Radio. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned, CWECanada.ca, for information on next week's episode.